Welcome back to Light on Conspiracies, the second part for subscribers only.
I'm here with police officer Alex Scott, who's been serving for more than 24 years, I think 25 now, in many, many different areas. And we are taking part of his views on many different aspects of alleged terror attacks, alleged mass shootings, news in the media that is most people don't even put a question mark to, but it's come to many researchers' attention more and more that a lot of the things that is being fed to us through mainstream media is just not true. So we live in quite extreme times, I would say. So Alex, one thing that I would very much like to ask you is that for years I've been trying to get in touch with the hearts of police officers and people in the military, because I feel that people in uniform are the ones that are protecting this very brutal and dark agenda that is set in motion big time to control us, the normal people. And people in uniforms are the ones in between. And many times it's coming to a point where the people in uniform are actually not protecting us the way it should be, but the other way around. And I know quite a few police officers that have contacted me are desperate and also very frustrated and afraid also, because they say, I don't know what to do, because I don't know who to trust. If I speak out, if I take a stand forward, I have no idea what's going to happen, and so on. Have you got any advice for people in this situation?
Yeah, it is difficult. And, you know, I run up against that same thing. I have to kind of watch what I say and who I say it to. You have to be kind of covert, but you have to seek out like minds within the profession. And I have three or four people at work, and we get together and we talk about these things. But you know, when you're in that profession, you know, you're essentially a part of the control grid, you know. And unfortunately, most police departments, they foster that. As an example, I was looking at some various training that is available over the summer to police officers. And I noticed that there was some counterterrorism training that's becoming available. And one of the topics was what we learned at the Boston bombing and how, you know, how we can proceed forward. And so, you know, you go to these trainings and these things are just reinforced. I mean, you're not going to go to police training and the people who are running the training aren't going to say, now, you may not realize this, you may not know this, but, you know, Boston bombing was a false flag. It really didn't happen. So what you're going to get when you go to these trainings are reinforcement of the official narrative. Because getting back to that whole control issue, they have to keep the people who are enforcing the laws and enforcing their programs, they have to keep us, what's the word I want? Blindfolded, or they have to keep us in the matrix. So, you know, back to your original question, it is difficult because most people in a police department or in the military, especially in the military, you know, if you go to your senior officers and your senior commanders and you start saying, you know, why are we fighting ISIS when, you know, ISIS was created by the United States intelligence agencies with the Mossad and the help of Saudi Arabia, you know, you find yourself court-martialed. So yeah, it's a very tough line to walk. we had an incident here a couple of months back where we had a gentleman in Ohio who supposedly shot an elderly black man and posted it live to Facebook. And they had this big, massive manhunt. And you could tell the whole thing was staged. It was scripted. And I was at work getting ready for our morning meeting. And one of my fellow officers just made the comment, you know, boy, I hope they catch that guy in Cleveland that, you know, that killed that guy. And I wasn't thinking, just off the cuff, I said, come on, you know, that was staged. Look at this. And he got so upset with me. His normalcy bias and his cognitive dissonance was so ingrained that he literally walked out of the room. He was so angry with me, and I was not angry. I was just trying to point things out. And, you know, it was 3 or 4 days. He wouldn't even look at me. He'd walk by me, or he'd see me walk coming and he turned the other way. So I finally went up to him. I said, are you angry with me? Because I am in no way mad at you. I said, I'm sorry if I offended you, but he said, well, you know, you just think everything's a conspiracy. And, so, yeah, it's difficult for police officers and people in the military, people in those lines of work. You know, you become a very lone voice in the wilderness, and you have to watch what you say. But
can I ask you, when you see news footage and so on, and you can see after a while that, oops, this is not correct. This is another one that is staged. When you see the police officers that are part of it, are they real police officers the way you see it, or are they behaving like police officers, or are there things that gives them away that shows you that, whoops, that guy, okay, he's got a uniform, but he's not the real deal?
Yeah, I think a lot of times they do use crisis actors dressed as police officers. Now, in the bigger events, and I'm sure you well know this for studying it as long as you have, people become compartmentalized. So they may stage a huge event. I keep going back to Manchester just because that's fresh. So I'm sure that there was a lot of police officers and firefighters that responded to that, but especially police officers who responded, and they were told, hey, we need you guys to stand on the edge of the perimeter and make sure nobody comes in. And by giving them that job, you know, they're the ones that are compartmentalized, to the respect that they think that this is probably a real event. So they want to do their best. You know, they want to help out wherever they can while they bring in the crisis actors who are directly involved in the center of everything. Most of these events, if you look to the center of the action, I'm trying to think of one just right offhand, Stockholm. There's a lot of footage in Stockholm where you had police and firefighters. They look like they're tending to the wounded, or they look like they're real busy, but if you just take 3 or 4 people and watch them and focus on them, they're really doing absolutely nothing. They're just kind of doing busy work to make it look like something is going on. There's one woman, I call her the lady in red at the Stockholm attack. If you go look at this footage, you can see her. She looks like she's going back and forth to the wounded, like maybe she's a doctor or something. But the more you look at it, she's probably just a director, but she's going over to somebody, okay, are you getting done what you need to be doing at this scene? And she'll go to another scene. Okay, are you getting done which she's really doing? She's really not doing anything but directing the scene. And you know, this is something that you want to look for. When people are tragically killed in a bomb blast or a mass shooting, and the police and the EMT come through there, we've got a job to do. We want to make that scene safe. We want to get the injured out as quickly as possible. But oftentimes, Ollie, as you well know, what you see is people come in and there's no sense of urgency. The paramedics or the police officers have a very relaxed look on their face. These are very tense situations. If that were real, the adrenaline would be going. Everybody would have a specific job to do. And with the Manchester attack, and you see it, these at a lot of the attacks, but not just Manchester, but I especially saw it at Manchester. You have a lot of victims lying around on the ground, but they're just being tended to by everyday people. Mm. And then you look and there's an EMT or a paramedic or a police officer standing right next to them. Well, why is this person being treated and being consoled or whatever it is by an average citizen? These people should be treated by the paramedics, not the person who was on the sidewalk and went, "Oh my God, you need help." But you see this a lot. And you also saw the Manchester attack. It was really kind of humorous in a way. You saw these people being wheeled on gurneys like they were taken into an ambulance, but they never took them to an ambulance. You know where they took them? They took them into the Marriott Hotel,
which is right opposite the street of the hospital.
Exactly.
I love it.
Like, when did the Marriott Hotel get a level one trauma center? You know?
But this is what I normally do. Like, when there are things like this with aerial footage, I love aerial footage. When you find on YouTube, it says raw material or raw mm-hmm. footage. Mm-hmm. It's just there for like an hour or two. That's where you find the thing. Just pick anyone and see what is that guy doing. And you will see they will walk around in circles. They will walk around and so they will wheel some wheelchair across the bridge and then back and then across again. And they, nothing is happening. Absolutely nothing is happening. And like the, in Stockholm, you were talking about there, look at the vehicles. There's especially one ambulance that is there. Then it reverses out of picture. Then it comes in again. Then it reverses out of picture. And then it comes in again. Mm-hmm. And the victim is still, you can't see the victim. You can just see a crowd of people working on someone. But the people that are there that looks like they're from a hospital, they're just standing watching. And there's some people from the fire brigade that are just walking around doing zero. And nothing happens. That's the whole thing. Nothing goes on. Please.
No, I was going to say, you know, for the past year or so, the meme now has been these car attacks and these truck attacks in Melbourne, in Stockholm, in Berlin, even one in Jerusalem, most recently the one at Times Square in New York. And it seems like whenever they have these car attacks, the car somehow miraculously catches on fire. Mm. And if you know anything about modern automobiles, it's very difficult for a modern automobile to catch fire. I've been at several critical crashes and car accidents where you think, how did this car keep from exploding? Well, the way they design, you know, their safety designs, they, you know, these cars don't go up in flames anymore like they did in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s when you'd have a crash or something and you'd hit the gas tank and the car would explode. They just don't do that anymore. But we saw that, you know, we saw that in Stockholm. And how did the beer truck catch on fire? You know, this wasn't whiskey, you know.
It wasn't
a flammable substance. Same thing in Times Square. How did this guy's car catch on fire when it hit? Now the whole Times Square thing, I've been able to show and find where that, I mean, that whole scene has been done through CGI. If you look at the Times Square incident, this is where, I forget the suspect's name now. I've got it right. Richard Rojas supposedly drove over, you know, dozens of people on the streets in Manhattan and through Times Square, but they're just bouncing off the car. Mm-hmm. And you know, throughout these car attacks, people have been asking, well, where's the CCTV footage if this car really was hitting people? You know, a lot of people began asking that after Melbourne, you know, at the Burke Street attack. People were saying, you know, we want to see the video footage. well, the video cameras weren't working that day, or they were broke, or those cameras happened to be down, so we don't have any footage. But for the Times Square incident, they did a complete 180, and they released all the footage from start to finish of this guy driving over people. What I call it, it's practically, it's an orgy of evidence. It's almost too much evidence. But there was a video I found of some guys who do CGI work, and they were showing videos of how they train stuntmen and stuntwomen in Hollywood, how to be hit by a car and not get hurt. And that's exactly what was going on here in Times Square. You had a guy that was only identified as Andrew. If you go to my website, if you go to Fake Story of the Day.
I love Andrew.
Yeah, well, Andrew's awesome. He is so...
I think he's the younger brother of this 9/11 guy who...
Yeah, the Harley Davidson guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Andrew claims that his backpack was struck by Richard Rojas as he drove along the sidewalk, and that it broke his cell phone. But he was able to jump out of the way. But when you go back and look at the footage of Andrew could have, there was a store, he was walking right next to a store. All he had to do was just like run in that store. But instead he ran out in the pathway of this vehicle. So the car runs over both of Andrew's legs and Andrew gets right back up. Now, I don't know about you, but if my kneecaps were run over by a 3,000 pound Honda, I wouldn't be getting up. My kneecaps would be shattered. But not only does he get back up, he's well and dandy to give an interview to the media 2 or 3 hours later. But also there's a photo, and I could send it to you, that somebody captured of the evening before the Times Square attack on this exact same location where Richard Rojas's car came to rest. There is something with a red tarp over it at that exact same place. So that car was very likely just placed there.
Ooh, I would like that photo. Yeah. I have not seen that.
Yeah. And then the CGI was produced to make it look like people were getting run over. And that sounds, if people listening to that for the first time, they think, that's crazy. How can they do that? Well, you know, go back and look at movies, you know, like Transformers or Mission Impossible movies where, you know, they have the big budgets and they can do all these, you know. Tom Cruise is, you know, he's not almost getting hit by helicopters and planes and stuff. These are all being CGI'd in. And that's exactly what they're doing here. It's pretty remarkable, but you know, it's that fear. They have to keep us in a constant state of fear, because the people, I truly believe that the people who are in control, they feed off of our fear, among many other things.
But it's only through fear that they can control us. If we're not fearful, they have no power whatsoever.
Exactly. We're by being in fear, we are again giving our consent. And it all comes back to consent. That is our, it's subconscious, it's our tacit consent, but it's still our consent nonetheless. And I'm sure you get this question too, Ole, when you are trying to explain one of these false flags. The big question is always, why would they do that? People get hung up on the why. I don't know why they do all these, but I know that they're doing them. I don't know what goes through our controllers' heads, and I don't think I want to know. But we know that they're being done, and we have to stop focusing on the why and focus on the lie. We're being lied to. And a lot of times what I will tell people, and I like this analogy, is when people ask me why they do it, there's no way that they would do something like that. It's just not possible. If they were really doing that, it would be on the news. Why would they do that? I said, look, think of a homicide detective. A homicide detective would not walk into a crime scene and see 20 dead bodies laying around and say, well, nobody's killed here because I don't see a motive. Let's go home. He doesn't know the motive when he goes in, but he knows that somebody's dead because he can see them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we find the motive later. You know, focus on what's being presented now. What is being presented right now is false. So stop focusing on the why so much. And start focusing on the lie. They're lying to us.
I tell you, I've recently believed that I found out a little a bit about the why when it comes to these vehicles. I mean, if you noticed from the Nice attack, that was when they started with this hitting with trucks, Nice, then Berlin. You had Jerusalem, totally staged there as well. And the Melbourne attack with a normal car. You had now the Times Square and so on. And I was watching this. We homeschool our daughter, and some of the homeschooling is to watch different videos. And it was about our future. It was what will our society look like 2050, the year 2050. And they were talking about these cities that where the vehicles were, I think they called them autonomous, you know, no drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Where trucks were driving and transporting things, but there were no driver in them. They had all these computer systems and where one of the main players in developing these driverless trucks is Scania, the truck company Scania in Sweden. And in this documentary, they showed these trucks driving, you know, like there were three trucks driving after each other, no drivers in it. That model is identical, the color, everything is identical to the truck that was used in Berlin, even though, and that was a totally staged event. Then we have the bollards that are there, that is another theme that has just come out recently, bollards, because of Euro security. And so I believe that the reason for the attacks, were, instead of just explosives or what do you call it, chemical attacks, now it's vehicles. And that is why they want to promote this whole thing with the driverless vehicles for our protection. But they're, I mean, they just want to be able to control all different areas of life, and transport is one of the major ones. So I think this is what we see here. Yeah. I also want to point out, when it comes to the Times Square, you were talking about, it sounds like, yeah, but how can you do a thing like that? I mean, there were lots of people being hit and they were flying all over the place. There's especially one sequence. If you go frame by frame by frame, you will see that there's one guy. It almost looks like he's glued onto the right fender.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like he's falling off the car, but he's not. He's sitting static on it for some 8-10 yards at least. And there's another body, I don't even think it's a human. It looks more like some kind of gray dummy that's across the windscreen that is there statically. And then there's a woman hanging underneath the grill, but they're there while you see the other bodies falling off. They're there like as static ones. So I believe the car was equipped with these ones. And then you have stuntmen doing the other ones. And there's especially one guy in a black t-shirt and black shorts. He's lying on the pavement afterwards, and you will see he's got like body armor under his t-shirt.
Yeah, they're wearing padding. A lot of them were wearing padding, because if you look at a lot of it, it was a warm day that day. It was in the 80s, 80 degrees Fahrenheit, and a lot of these people were wearing, you know, they're wearing long pants, they're wearing long shirts, and if you go to my site and read the story and look at the video I have of them showing how to train stuntmen. They're wearing that padding underneath their clothes. And then there's another scene too during the Times Square incident, as right after this is toward the beginning of the CCTV footage, where Rojas runs over 10 or 12 people. And so as soon as everyone is down on the ground, you see a man run out waving his arms.
Yeah.
And
that's a rep.
Yeah. He's yelling cut is what he's doing.
Yeah.
Cause I saw that. I thought, what is this guy doing? At first I thought, okay, well, he's just concerned about these people. I thought, no, he's not looking at the people. He's looking at the entire scene, and he's waving his arms and he's yelling cut.
Mm.
So yeah, it's amazing. And you know, as technology gets better and better and better, it's going to be easier for them to fake these things and make them look more and more real.
Yeah, because also it's important to understand that these are media events, not terror attacks. They're aimed for the media, not for people on location, because like in Stockholm, there was a lot of diversion. You know, they started shooting. Police was running around, knocking on the windows, saying, get down, lock the doors, and so on. So people were running into the shops, locking them, and they had to stay in there for hours before anyone even saw the truck. And all of the people who claim that they've seen the truck, I have about, I believe, 24 people that say that they saw the truck do things or move or whatever. 19 of them were connected either to media, film, theater, or the government.
Yeah.
And this is what we see repeatedly. I haven't been able to check the last four ones if they are somehow connected to, but it's hard for me not to believe that they were there. But because I don't think the truck moved at all. You know, it's like, but how to pull it off in the middle of the day in central Stockholm and so on. It's a big operation. And so you have to give it to them. And here, suddenly, for the first time in Times Square, suddenly the CCTV footage were working. I mean, we have been saying for years, one of the sure signs of a false flag, the CCTV just shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
But then they deliver us this thing that is very advanced in CGI instead.
Well, another aspect, you know, going back to the UCC codes and everything, you know, so many of these, almost all these, especially the big events, these are being done through contracts. And so what's the term that I want? There's a FEMA capstone event. Sandy Hook was a FEMA capstone event. So it involved FEMA and involved Homeland Security. And there's a lot of contracting that goes on. So, because my thing is, I could not in good conscience, if I was the chief of police of a police department and they came to me and they said, hey, it's going to be a lot of money. We can get a lot of support from people, whether it be the gun control issue or mental health or whatever, you know, this will really raise mental health awareness. We're going to have an incident, but no, nobody's going to get hurt. You know, nobody's going to die. But, you know, your department is going to get $40 million. And you're going to get all this equipment and get whatever you want. But like I said, nobody's going to get hurt. So now, in order for this to happen, we need you to sign this. This is a confidentiality agreement. It just says, you know, that you can't talk about, you know, really what happened. So ethically, there is no way that I could do that. That's what really pains me being in law enforcement is, you know, I see people like during Sandy Hook, I see Lieutenant Paul Vance, who was the spokesperson for the Connecticut State Police, who came out. And I mean, he knew that this was not a real incident, that no children died, or the event in Dallas last year, the chief of Dallas police, you know, he knew that none of his officers died. I could not ethically in good conscience ever do that. I would be so ashamed. So that is very disheartening to me as a police officer. Mm-hmm. I don't see how my fellow officers could participate in something like that, but obviously it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And after that, I don't know if threats are made. Cause I mean, you can't just say, oh, I feel really bad about this. I'm going to blow the whistle on this. You can't do that, you know, and not if you love your family. So yeah, it's like I said, it's very disheartening.
You know, I was one of the key speakers at the JFK assassination conference in Dallas last year, which was not long after this alleged police killing had happened in Dallas. And when it happened, I was just like, you must be, is it anywhere near Dealey Plaza? I'm just going to, you know, it's just too much. And it was just a stone's throw away. But I went there. It was right outside where the conference was held at the Plaza Crown Hotel. You could see that they picked exactly an area where there were homeless people. It was right near the train station and so on. So that was the area, that exact street that people sort of were a little bit aware of and stayed away from. And then the, where you can see these, the, there's, it's been, it was filmed even from the same hotel that I was in. From the ninth floor, I found the exact angle where this shaky video was filmed from. And you can, so I went down and I saw the exact, where the bullets are said to have hit the sort of the concrete walls. And
yeah, the sparks.
The sparks, because this is what we're talking about. We're talking film effects, fire sparks, not real bullet holes. There was no bullet holes entered. There were these round things that had just taken away the paint work, you know. So absolutely, but at the same time, we were out walking one day, and we were a long way from the hotel, and so we stopped to ask a police officer the way. It was a female Latino woman who was a police officer. And she offered to drive us, so I got a ride in a Dallas police car. She was so and I asked her about this thing, and she totally believed it. I didn't say anything about what I was doing or what that I suspected anything. I just wanted to know her opinion, and she absolutely believed that that is what happened. So it's quite incredible that it can. Do you know that? How can they do that? But what I found is that very often the police that are killed or involved come from the outside, just like a few weeks before this happened, and then boom, they're killed and they're dead. That is not old timers and so on.
No,
but
yeah, every once in a while you'll have somebody who's been on for 20 some years, but then you've got to think, well, he was close to retirement anyway.
Yeah,
they probably said, here you go. Nobody's going to get hurt. You're not going to get hurt, but you're near your retirement. So we're going to give you a boatload of money to do this. Yeah. And you can retire wherever you want. And
for national security as well.
Oh, yeah. There was an incident, another incident in Ohio a couple of weeks ago, where a man went into a nursing home and killed his girlfriend, and he killed the chief of police. The chief of police had only been there 3 weeks. And he was killed. And so I started looking at this chief of police, and so he was chief of police. His total law enforcement experience, total 8 months. 8 months he was a police officer, but he was a chief of police.
He did well.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. You can't be a police officer for only 8 months and be a chief of police. And I'm sure if I delve deeper into it and try to go back and get his police academy transcripts and everything, you probably never even went to the academy.
But I find that time limit is very interesting, the 8 months, because that is when people start appearing before things like that happen. You know, they move to the area, or so it's almost like they move these characters into the area.
It's the false flag gestation period, is what I call it.
Exactly, you know, so that you get to, the neighbors get to know you just a little, and so that you're part of the community, and then, boom, you can get killed. The emotion can get moving and so on. Because very often people say that, well, he lived right down the street. I heard. I never really saw him, but they're still impacted emotionally.
Yeah. And here's another thing people don't think about with all these staged events are government statistics. So you have the National Crimes Database, and you have all these gun violence websites and gun violence databases. And these numbers are skewed. There are a lot fewer people getting shot and killed with firearms than what they're making out. Because if we go through and we analyze all these events that are actually staged, so let's say, like in this recent one I'm writing about, 8 people shot and killed. Well, they weren't, but they're going to be a statistic in the database. So what that does is that helps promote the anti-gun lobby. So they can say, look at all these people who were killed. We had 8 people killed in Mississippi last weekend alone. Now that's not to take away for true crime that is happening. There are teenagers, youth being shot and killed in Chicago every weekend. Those are definitely real crimes. I'm not taking anything away from actual crimes, but with all these staged events, they are skewing the numbers, or they're padding their numbers for political purposes. Same way with police officers. Here in the States, we have an organization called the Under 100 or Below 100, and almost every department is participating in it. And you go and you listen to a presenter, and it's actually a good program. It teaches you, it shows you how about officer safety and what not to do. And but what their goal is, they want to keep officer deaths to under 100, which is a noble goal. Any police officer death is tragic, but when you start adding in these police officers supposedly killed in these staged events, like the police officers in Dallas or the police officers in Baton Rouge or New Orleans, all these people are also included in these statistics. So now their statistics are skewed. So there may have been, they may say there were 200 police officers who died in any particular year or were killed in the line of duty. Well, that may, as tragic as it is, may only be maybe 40, because all these others are staged. That's one thing that upsets me, is that these numbers aren't real. And there's people who are getting political, financial gain off of the sympathy of the general public who is believing this, especially these GoFundMe accounts. Oh my God, Oli. Every time that there's a big event, one of the sure signs is if immediately a GoFundMe account is set up. And this goes back to if my wife or son were just murdered, my first thought wasn't, oh my God, this is so terrible, I gotta go set up a GoFundMe account. Mm-hmm. But these are almost always started either the day of the incident or the day after. Sometimes the day before, yeah.
But I learned, I did an interview with a guy who used to live in Sandy Hook, and he said that, because he had been looking into these GoFundMe things as well, and he found out that the founder of GoFundMe was a very close advisor to Obama.
Would you imagine that?
Well, I need to look into that more, there's also this thing with the product placement that I really claim is going on, where they put these products in the middle of these horrific events, so that when mm-hmm. we're totally emotional open, we see Coca-Cola, McDonald's, and
it's Budweiser,
Budweiser just happens to be there when we're like blown away, because that is where they can really get to you. And I was thinking about, could that be partly the financing of these as well, that they bring in money like that as well into the operations?
That's part of the contract. In these capstone events, they include everything, because they have to have rehearsals. So they bring in caterers, and they bring in these companies, especially bottled water. One of the sure signs is start looking for bottled water at these events. In my Times Square incident, I have a whole series of pictures where not only is there bottled water, everybody is carrying around the same brand of bottled water. So I'm counting here. I think I put in like 9 pictures of 9 separate individuals, and they all have the same brand of bottled water at the same event. It's just not natural. Yeah.
Oh, Alex, it's just a coincidence. You see,
no, okay. I'm a coincidence. theorists. Why would they do that?
Because I used to work on a lot of film sets as a background extra, you know. And the thing is, if it's a hot day, they have people that are responsible for the extras that just goes around and hand out water, which mm-hmm. will be the exact same bottle, the exact same brand, and this is what we see here as well. Yeah. Also with the name, the tags around the neck, sometimes color-coded,
yeah.
and so on. This is also film set. We're talking film events, film fake events, instead of terror attacks. That's the whole bizarre thing.
Yeah, it's called hyper-reality filmmaking.
Yeah.
I think,
Alex, you wanted to mention something about this law that suddenly made it possible for the government to pull these things off. What was the name of this law?
Oh, the Smith-Mundt Act. So in 1948, Congress passed what was known as the Smith-Mundt Act. And this was passed because at the time it's when communism was really taking hold across the world, especially with the Soviet Union. And communism was starting to influence the United States government and especially Hollywood. So the Congress and the United States government in general, they didn't want people being corrupted by communism. And one of the tenets of communism has always been propaganda. So they passed the Smith-Mundt Act, and what the Smith-Mundt Act did, it prohibited news agencies from basically lying to us, from putting out false stories. Now, this didn't necessarily stop the government from staging things. I mean, you still had the government doing covert staging of different events, but it was on a much, much smaller scale. So the Smith-Mundt Act helped to protect the American citizens through the media of being outright lied to. And again, there were some examples, exceptions rather. But then in 2011, we had what was called the NDAA, or the National Defense Authorization Act, which Obama signed. Well, within the National Defense Authorization Act, you had a clause in there that was actually a repeal of the Smith-Mundt Act. So that took effect in 2012. So as of 2012 in the United States, it is now lawful for the media to give us propaganda pieces. And if you go back and look, 2012 is when this really started gaining ground and gaining speed, because you had Sandy Hook, you had the Boston bombing, you had San Bernardino. So now that they no longer have the Smith-Mundt Act, now that that's repealed, they can stage these events and basically not get in any trouble for them. And they're condoned by our government. I mean, pretty much scripted by elements within our government. The Smith-Mundt Act was you know, just one of those layers of protection that we had, and now we no longer have it, thanks to the National Defense Authorization Act.
And you have to ask yourself, why on earth would they take away such a law if they were not up to something not so nice?
Well, it comes back to control again. They have to make us amenable. I always give the analogy of Facebook. I don't participate in Facebook because I don't like it. It's kind of creepy to me. People ask me, hey, what's your Facebook? I said, I don't do Facebook because, I don't want to participate in a covert spy grid whose startup funding was provided by the CIA. But, if the American government came to the American people or the European government came to all the people and they said, hey, here's what we want to do, Ole. We want to know everything about you. We want to know where you're going, what your favorite restaurants are. We want to know who all your friends are, where you're going, what you like to do, what you don't like to do. So basically we're just going to, we're going to monitor you and survey you 24 hours a day. Most people would say, no, I really don't like that. But if you package it up real nice and call it Facebook, mm-hmm. everybody loves it. Yeah. So it's
incredible. I mean, you have to give it to them sometimes, you know, like how they pull it off.
Yeah. and you tell people that, and they, and you know, a lot of times the response I get is, well, I don't care. I'm not doing it. I don't have anything to hide. I don't have anything to hide. And I always say, that's like saying, I don't care about the First Amendment because I have nothing to say. Mm. You know, it's still a matter of privacy. We still deserve the right to have our privacy. And slowly that's being stripped away. And these events, the way they're scripted and the way they appeal to people's sympathy and their empathy, especially when kids are involved, then they're going to say, you know, we probably will be a little more safer if there's more police on the street or more military on the on the street. So I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way that's one reason why these events are used, is to make the people amenable to these programs that they want to push out.
Mm-hmm. So. Alex, can I have your point of view when it comes to FEMA and Homeland Security?
Well, I think the spider web that is Homeland Security, excuse me. You know, Homeland Security several years ago had their big campaign of the see something, say something. And they really pushed it because, again, they want snitches, basically. So I look at the see something, say something as nothing more than citizens being in fear of their fellow citizens from a really largely non-existent terrorist threat. But as I'm sure you well know, the whole Homeland Security bill was already written and ready to go prior to 9/11. They needed 9/11 to happen so they could enact Homeland Security, because there are so many draconian policies within the Patriot Act that, again, if you just went to people without a catastrophic event and say, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to put TSA in all the airports, we're basically going to strip search you and molest you to allow you to get on a plane, I really don't think people would go for that. But if you wrap it up in a nice, neat bow, as, you know, they're hoping to keep us safe. When we know that almost every terrorist attack that the FBI has supposedly foiled, they orchestrated, you know, they get these people who are patsies and who aren't not particularly bright, and they ply them. They convince them, you know, hey, you need to do this, you know, you'll get away with it. And they give them the means to do that. And then right before they do it, they swoop in and arrest them and look like the heroes. And then in every state, as part of Homeland Security, you have these agencies that they're called fusion centers. Are you familiar with the fusion centers?
Sounds like concentration camps to me.
Yeah. So the fusion centers are another part of that control grid. So each state has it, and some states have multiple fusion centers. Just depends on, like California has a fusion center in Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, you know, all the big major cities, they have a fusion center. So what the fusion center is supposed to do is supposed to investigate terrorist threats and to catch terrorists, but there's not been one incident of any fusion center thwarting any sort of terrorist attack. And in fact, it's just the opposite, because when you have these attacks, invariably the media comes out and says, well, with the recent attack, the suspect was known to law enforcement. You know, in Manchester, this guy was known to anti-terror officials and to law enforcement. Well, if they're known so well, why don't you stop them from doing it in the first place? The Homeland Security and the fusion centers, it's they're just another part of that big spider web.
I tell you, I have a little idea why they keep, because what you're saying is it's a standard thing that he was known by the authorities. He was known that it's every single time. And so it's a standard ingredient. And I think maybe they're doing that to suddenly one day say, well, we suspect all of them over there of future events. So we might as well just get rid of them here and now to avoid it.
And yeah.
Because we know about that, what they're up to, just like we knew about all the rest of them, and you saw how that went down. So
right. Well, it's all incremental, Oli. You know, they'll plant an idea, like DNA. You know, they want everybody's DNA. So there's actually been instances here in the States where they've had like random DNA stops. You know, like a DUI checkpoint, only to be from DNA, and they'll be stopping people, and they'll be all nice and friendly and say, you know, we just, you know, we want to get people in the DNA database in case you ever come up missing or something. You know, we'll take a swab, and here's a $25 Walmart gift card. And what, you're going to give me $25 to take a swab in my mouth? Sure. That sounds, you know, $25. Sure. I could use that. And, you know, you know, a lot of people do it. Mm. And, you know, they don't stop and think, whoa, that's infringing on my civil liberties. I'm not giving you a sample of my DNA. Are you crazy? But again, it's our consent. They have to get our consent. They aren't stopping and say, give us your DNA. They're saying, hey, they're being all friendly. We'd like, you know, we're just kind of getting samples of DNA. This is why we're doing it, because, you know, maybe one day it could help save your life or it could find you if you come up missing. Mm-hmm. And so if you consent to us doing this, we'll give you a $25 gift card or whatever. So again, comes back again, Oli. It's all about consent. We have to give our consent.
Do you know, doing what I do, I mean, I'm just an ordinary guy, but who have sort of, I don't know, really know how I ended up in this. I've just been trying to follow truth wherever it led me. And one of the things that I don't fear the bad guys, I fear the so-called good guys, you know. For me, the police and the official investigations, these are the threats when it comes to my personal security, you know, crossing borders and so on. I feel very uncomfortable many times. Yeah. And so on, because I have no idea what's going to go down. And so what I practice is exactly that thing you're talking about. Because when they say, hello, Mr. Damagod, can you please come with us? That is an invitation, you know. And if I just say, give my consent and follow, I've accepted, and we go into an agreement that sort of, but if I say, that's so very kind of you, thank you, but no thank you, and just stay put. And then I've only been in a situation like this more or less once, but that was it. But I keep practicing it just in case, you know. Also, when they say, you know, they start threatening or whatever, am I arrested? Am I detained, or am I free to go?
Right.
Am I detained, or am I free to go? Because the thing is, I have done nothing. I have done absolutely nothing. So for them to get me into a room where they close the door and so on, I'm not going there if I can avoid it, you know. And so by not giving my consent, what I found out is that they can do nothing. They have to let you go if there's not serious suspicion about something criminal.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I said about it. It all comes down to our consent. There was a bill that passed here in my state. I'm not going to say too much about it because it might give the state away. But we were told that certain people who had a license to carry a firearm, that if we observed the firearm, we had to ask them for their concealed carry permit. And I said, you know, I'm uncomfortable with that because the Supreme Court says that you cannot just go up and ask somebody to see their concealed carry permit just because you see that they have a gun. We have to have a reasonable suspicion or probable cause to believe that they are going to commit a crime. And I was basically told, no, you will do this. I said, no, I'm uncomfortable doing that because that infringes on somebody's civil liberties. If I'm not in fear for my life, if they're not being reckless with that firearm, I don't have a reason to ask them for their permit. And about 4 days later, the legal department came down and said, stop asking people for their permits. The Supreme Court says that you cannot do that. Stop it. So I just said, now I'm vindicated. See what I mean?
Mm.
And
excellent. Well done, Alex. Well done. Well.
So I want people to know there are good police officers out there.
But this is the whole thing. It's people like you that we should really honor, you know, because you're the ones doing what you're supposed to do. You're the ones that should be the good guys that are there to protect us. So anyone that joins your way of thinking and being, we should really, really salute. And I welcome anyone to take a step forward from the ranks of uniformed police officers, SWAT teams, and so on.
I would encourage anybody who is a police officer, or if you're in the military and you go to my website and you just want to talk to somebody who's like-minded, send me an email. You know, because people in this profession, like I said earlier, you know, it's tough. It's without getting yourself in trouble or being labeled a kook or a conspiracy theorist, it can be difficult. You know, we're kind of alone in the wilderness when it comes to this thing. So, you know, just, you know, feel free to send me an email and, you know, I'll always respond.
Could you please give us your website again?
Sure. It's fakestoryoftheday.com. fakestoryoftheday.com.
And that means that there will be at least 365 fake stories per year.
Yeah, I wish I had enough time to do one every single day.
Yeah.
That's my goal. I really admire these guys who have the YouTube channels, you know, the real truthers out there who are putting out things on, because it's a lot easier sometimes to do a video than it is to write. But I love to write, and I love to include pictures and give my own take on these things. So I put a lot of time into them, but I'm also kind of OCD. So I've got to learn, I guess, not to be so critical on myself when I'm writing these, but I just want them to be quality pieces of work. And if you go to my site, I state on the about section, I will gladly, if I make a mistake anywhere, and if I put out a story or a part of a story that I get wrong, I will retract that. I'm not beyond making a mistake. The same way, I'm also finding stories that are real that I want to put on there. There's one story that I put on recently where supposedly a man was shot on CCTV camera in the stomach, but you never see any blood come out. He's laying there on the sidewalk with being shot in the stomach, but there's no blood. Another guy that got shot through the hand, so it went through his hand, went through his chest, out the back of his neck, severed one of his vertebrae, and he gave an interview the next day. So I had a doctor friend of mine look at that video and tell me if that was medically possible. And of course he said, no, that's ridiculous. That guy would never be able to do that. And there was a very similar event that I know took place here in town, that happened to a gentleman, and I took that story and I compared and contrasted it, because this gentleman was in rehab for months. He walked with a limp afterwards. He couldn't turn his neck. So anytime I can find a story where I can compare and contrast a real event with a fake event, I'm going to do that.
That is so excellent, Alex. And really, I want to thank you for having the courage to do what you do and stand for these beautiful things that you stand for, which is our liberties. I really hope that this has been inspiring for other people, especially in uniform, to see that there is a way to do it, even if it's not easy. Nobody has said it's easy, but it's not impossible. You just have to find the strength within you and the stamina and do it. So yeah.
You got to do it, and you've got to start saying no.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to stop giving our consent for everything. And the more people that do that, you know, the faster the awakening will come about. And only I also want to thank you. You know, you do such marvelous work, and it's consistent, and you've done it for all these years, and you're such a pleasure to talk to, such a well-mannered guy, and so intelligent. I want you to know I've learned so much from following your work, and it's been an inspiration. So thank you.
Thank you. That is very, very, it makes it worthwhile, because just like you, I'm a one-man band, and it's sort of like I'm just in my own little bubble, not really knowing if anything gets out there. But I feel really that a big change is on the move here.
Yeah, so, I do too. Yeah.
Excellent. Listen, Alex, thank you once again, and let's stay in touch. I really would like to learn more about your work and what you come forward with in the future. So if you want to become a guest in the future, I would be very happy to have you back.
I would be honored to do so. That'd be great.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for getting on.
Thank you so much for listening to Light on Conspiracies, the place where truth and love transcend the darkness. Take care and see you soon.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize.
Coup d'etat in slow motion. Connecting the dots between the assassinations of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, JFK, Robert Kennedy, and John Lennon. Now available on Amazon and lightonconspiracies.com. Coup d'etat in slow motion.